Much love, Walker Harbor Church. I am thrilled to be with you. My name is Wally Harrison. I am the teaching pastor for Walker Harbor Church, and this is the second Sunday in January already. Wow. 2021, here we come. I have a couple things I would love for you to know as you gather here in this format. If you are giving, you may do so. It'll be on the screen. Multiple ways in which you could do that. You can do that online. You can send in a check. And again, multiple ways to do that. We are so grateful that you would partner with us and participate with us in this way. There's that. And then next Sunday, January 17, we are planning to gather in person at the 3 Mile Project, address here on screen, and we will gather at 10 a.m. We will have our masks on. We will create space to be able to properly distance so we can gather wisely, safely, but that we will gather together, and we are looking so very forward to that. We will offer elementary age kids ministry, but we will not be having nursery yet. So we would love to have you gather with us if you feel comfortable. Those of you who don't, we completely understand. We will record that gathering, and there will be an audio and video version available the following week and weeks after that as well. We'll continue to record those gatherings. So that is exciting. Wanted to let you know about that. Now, we're going to continue in our series, You Are Here. So this is week two. We're stepping into it. Enjoy all the different ways we'll worship here. And I'll be back in a little bit for a teaching.
Darkness here.
All right, here we go. Last week, we stepped into a new series called You Are Here. We make the note, it's a new year. We're in a new year. And for many people, many of you all, this past year was placed in the never open that file again drawer, right? Yeah, don't go there, right? And I get that. But I also feel, there's a part of me that certainly feels like the expectations that are being placed on this new year, well, they're astronomical. Because we want to get to the end of this virus. And we want to get on to whatever is next, as long as what is next is free of chaos. Right. And then 6 days into the new year. In fact, it was on the day known as the Feast of Epiphany, which means, the word epiphany means revealing. We watched our country melting into the fire of chaos. And the answer is not political parties. That's not the answer. Or pointing fingers. Nope. Friends, we are in the afterglow of Christmas, which celebrates the Creator as revealed and embodied in Jesus the Christ. If Jesus is the true pattern of the universe, then we can trust that love, justice, and restoration is where the story finds completion. Now, that can be really hard to see when our news notifications on our phone and the headlines on the TV is telling us that the sky has fallen. And yet, this series that we're in, this teaching series, is an invitation to pause and be here, to be fully present, the Hebrew word hineni, to be fully present before we go there, wherever there might be, which I think leads us into a quote that I read earlier this week within a meditation, a devotional, if you will, by the late Bruno Barnhart. He was a Camaldolese monk. He says this, we'll put it on screen. He said this, as we accompany Jesus through the Gospels, we are present at one dramatic meeting after another. One person after another experiences a mysterious power in Jesus that, from this moment, changes the course of his or her life. If we are fully present at the moment when we read such a narrative, we ourselves experience the liberating power of this awakening. Feel that. Come on. When we sink into the scriptures, when we watch and sit in the stories as they unfold and the change that happened for those people, we are inviting an opportunity for us to be shaped and changed. Come on. These life-altering moments, we are calling Kairos moments. Kairos moments. Now, last week I explained the differentiation between two Greek words when it comes to time, the kind of two modes of time. There is chronos, where we get the idea of chronological. So it is, in other words, that's minute by minute, hour by hour type of time. And then there's kairos, which we might call an aha moment. It's a moment in time where we notice that something deeper or bigger or wider, more anyways, is before us in this moment. So what we did is we began last week with the book of the Bible known as Mark, which is the good news or the gospel of the life of Jesus according to an early follower of Jesus named Mark. We specifically looked at the first words of Jesus according to Mark, which reveal what Jesus' central message was. And we'll put it on screen. Mark chapter 1, verse 15. And this is the Passion Translation. His message was this, Jesus' message. At last, the fulfillment of the age has come. It is time for the realm of God's kingdom to be experienced in its fullness. Turn your lives back to God and put your trust in the hope-filled good news. The time has arrived, friends, to experience the fullness of the realm of God's kingdom, is what he's saying. Jesus is introducing an experience of the realm of God's kingdom, which is found in the very life Jesus is living. We're being invited to see, to listen, and to comprehend what Jesus is doing through how he is living. And then we're invited to turn and follow in this way. So this takes us to what is known as the Kairos Circle. So we'll put that on screen, Kairos Circle. And we recognize when we recognize and are alert to a Kairos moment, a moment in time, we pause in order to work this Kairos Circle, if you will, where we begin with observing. We pause and observe, hey, this is a moment. This is something. Something else is going on. This is an invitation. So we observe and listen. Then, next we're going to, and what we'll get into here, is reflecting on it and discussing it with others. Then you make a plan, you account for things, and then you act, you move. That's what repent is, to turn and move toward God, back to God. That's what that is. So we'll get there, but we're going to spend some time on reflecting and discussing. So last week, we peered into the story of a young man named Samuel. And within his story, there is a moment in which Samuel is being invited to observe, to be fully present, and to listen to the divine who was calling him. But Samuel, in a very common, very human way, jumped up and he ran to someone else, his mentor, Eli. Samuel assumed that it was Eli that was calling to him. Eli, though, picks up on this and then coaches Samuel to stand still, to listen, and to ask the divine, keep talking, keep engaging with me here. And then Eli says to him, and Samuel, be fully present to the voice of the divine. So today what we want to do is we want to turn our attention to what it looks like to reflect and discuss. This is about seeking counsel for what it is that we've observed. Now we're going to, we get this? Now we're going to seek counsel on what we've observed, bring it to others, which of course raises the crucial question, who are the people we turn to as our village elders? Our Yoda, our Mr. Miyagi. To get at this, we turn to another biblical story that is just chock full of wisdom. So, what we often refer to as the Old Testament, it's the Hebrew Scriptures, because it tells the story of the Hebrew people. Now, this story centers on the forming of a people who become known as Israel. As they are becoming, we watch a number of other nations enslave and rule over them until a guy named David becomes their king, the Hebrew people, Israel's king. David leads them in becoming more. And then David dies, and his son Solomon takes over. Solomon is credited with building the temple in Jerusalem, while also building Israel up into its own empire. And we can't miss that. In fact, what it was is just in a few short generations, if you will, Israel goes from being slaves in Egypt to then Solomon conscripting slaves for constructing this very temple in Jerusalem. In building an empire, Solomon builds them up to be an empire. Solomon gains then in this process a number of enemies. Not surprising. When you become an empire, you gain enemies. And because Solomon demands such harsh labor, slavery, he enslaves, part of it, it's his own people. Where a lot of the slaves, his own people he enslaves. Then because of that, he has some of his own people rebel against him. One guy in particular is named Jeroboam. Now, after Solomon dies, his son, Rehoboam, so not confusing, there's this guy, Jeroboam, who's going to rebel. Then there is Solomon's son, Rehoboam. He is made king. And we're going to pick up the story there. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. So let's begin there. Rehoboam, Solomon's son, went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone there to make him king. When Jeroboam, here's a rebel, son of Nebat, heard this, he at the time was still in Egypt because he fleed from Solomon, even though he rebelled, he's like, I'm out of here, this is chaos, I'll come back later. He was still in Egypt where he had fled from King Solomon. He returned from Egypt, so they, that is the people of Israel, they sent for Jeroboam, and he and the whole assembly of Israel, which is really the leaders, likely the tribal leaders, the 12 tribes of Israel, it's probably the leadership, gather, and they went to Rehoboam to have a little chat. They said, your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now you, your king, lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you. Rehoboam answered, go away for 3 days and then come back to me. So the people went away. Let's not miss this. Rehoboam is made king, and immediately people come to him, including the rebel, Jeroboam, and ask, what will your leadership be like? Will you rule like your dad, or will you rule a bit differently? Which actually means underneath this, will you be more just? Now, if Rehoboam, there's tension here, because if Rehoboam listens to the people and he makes their load lighter, it's possible he could be viewed as weak and caving to these people, or even to rebels, if you will. But if he doubles down on the harsh labor, then he also could be viewed as a tyrannical dictator. Yeah, that'd be easy too. So you see, there's a bit of a tension here. So Rehoboam, and this is fantastic for what we're doing here, Rehoboam recognizes this is a Kairos moment. So he sends the people away for 3 days to buy some time to reflect on this. Excellent. Well done, Rehoboam. Let's buy some time. Let's take some time and reflect on this, because this is a Kairos moment. This matters. Now, let's keep going. Verse 6. Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. Rehoboam says, how would you advise me to answer these people? They replied, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. Now, it's important here, the Hebrew word for elders, because this is these elders, it carries with it the idea of wisdom. It's not necessarily age, but certainly there's experience in there, so there's going to be some older age as a part of this. Yes, yes, yes. But it carries the idea of wisdom, people of experience. And their advice is, hey, Rehoboam, a great leader is first a humble servant of and for the people. So maybe don't enslave the people. Rather, serve them and empower them, because that kind of leadership is worth following. Excellent. Great. That's the advice given. So what does Rehoboam do? Verse 8. But Rehoboam rejected the advice of the elders. Advice the elders gave him, and consulted the young man who had grown up with him and were serving him. Oh, sweet fancy Moses. As you can see, the foolishness and problems that we have today are not new. Because right here in this, we are being offered wisdom, a way forward that is bathed in goodness. But Rehoboam says no to the Otis. No. Those who advise what is best for all the people. He's like, no. Then he consults young men. It says the young men. Now, in Hebrew, this is most the young part, that word. It's most often translated infant or child. But then if you keep reading in chapter 14 of 1 Kings, we learn that Rehoboam was made king at the age of 41. And these are his people that he grew up with. So these are middle-aged men who are described as infantile or childish. Are you seeing that here? These guys are immature. They're as childhood buddies who now simply function as yes men to him. Because it says they're his servants. So they're just yes men to him. Does anyone want to take a guess on how this is going to turn out? Yeah, here we go. Verse 9. He asked them, Rehoboam asked them, hey, what's your advice, guys? How should we answer these people who say to me, lighten the yoke your father put on us? The young men who had grown up with him replied, these people have said to you, your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter. Now tell them, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. Real quick. That is garbage advice. Now we're going to unpack it. First, that statement, which maybe we're like, what? My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. Here's the thing. The Hebrew word for waist is most often translated as loins. And it's understood to be the seat of one's power. Now here's the thing. Little finger is a Hebraic euphemism for man parts. Yep. So Rebo's infantile buddies sink into toilet talk. This is essentially what they say. If you translate it literally, they say, tell the people I have more power in my pee-pee than all the power my dad had totally. Hey friends, welcome to Bible study. Yeah, it's welcome. That's all we do is just unpack the Hebrew, and this is what we get. This is the toilet talk they offer. This is the advice they give him. Can you see the immaturity? Just, oh goodness, goodness, goodness. And then the scorpions reference. It offers us a few options. Within the Hebrew, because contextually, it could be a jagged plant that is used for a tip of a whip, or it could be an iron implement that has a ragged head of either glass or stone that would have been carved to resemble a scorpion. That's another option. Or it could be an actual scorpion that they whip people with, perhaps poisonous, as a means basically of crippling people with the fear of potentially lethal punishment. Here's the thing. Feel free to play the multiple choice game of which sounds more fun. Yeah, good times, right? That's what's going on here. Okay, so now let's see how this thing unfolds. Verse 12. 3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to Rehoboam, as they were told, as the king had said, come back to me in 3 days. The king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. Oh boy. He followed the advice of the young, infantile men and said, my father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. Now, let's start with saying he leaves the pee-pee talk out. I mean, that's great. But otherwise, he quotes Tweedledee and Tweedledum word for word. This is a problem. Do we see this is not good? Verse 15, so the king did not listen. And listen as described. He did not listen to the people. For this turn of events, this is interesting, was from the Lord to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah, the Shilonite. Now that actually was found earlier, if you read earlier, what's going on there. But I find scholar Robert Alter's commentary on this scene really insightful and very thought-provoking. So I want to. Here's what Robert Alter says. Rehoboam alienates the people through a very unwise policy decision. Now, however, here in the text, it's given a theological explanation. This is the means through which God causes Ahijah's prophecy to be fulfilled. Yeah, very interesting. Now, the part of this of that story is found in chapter 11, so the chapter before. And it's all covered in the language of, if you walk in obedience to the divine, Jeroboam, in this thing. And all these different, like the different leaders are being invited, please walk in the obedience of the divine. Follow the divine commands in how to lead. Then we will see, then what will happen is the blessing of God will go from generation to generation if you just walk in his ways, if you just walk in the divine's commands. Right there. So there's a way, in other words, of justice in the world and righteousness in the world, which we have the even greater privilege we do here today of seeing it revealed and embodied in Jesus. We actually have more of an example of it. And there are other ways that lead, that you can live out, other ways to follow it that just simply lead to chaos. Let's keep going, verse 16. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king. This is so fantastic. What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? David is Jesse's son. To your tents, Israel. Off we go. Look after your own house, David. Seriously, read that again. Because what happened here is the people respond with two lines of poetry. It's a poem. It's poetry is how they respond. And they vividly express the distance they now feel from their ancestral foundations. We feel so far removed from how this community was founded and was supposed to be about. Rehoboam's brutal language makes them realize that their nation has become an empire. The fruit has rotted, friends. And they are saying, we owe no loyalty or allegiance to this way of being. Friends, this is strong. And this should echo within us today. Hey, this kind of way of being, that we know that that's not justice and righteousness. This isn't who we were created to be. This isn't who this community, this nation should be. No way. And they're letting him know that. Nope. From here, and don't miss this, from here the story is going to unravel into what will become a massive civil war and the splitting of Israel into two. Israel will never be the same from this point on. And the Hebrew prophets will poetically rail against the leadership for failing to be a source of blessing to the world. This moment with Rehoboam was one of many selfish and greedy choices that will leave Israel constantly under the boot of other global military superpowers until they will find them crying out in their suffering and pleading with the divine for rescue. Friends, you would think it impossible to miss the massive consequences from Rehoboam failing to listen to the wisdom that was placed in his life, those elders. Yet, here we are today. You'd think, man, we would have all, like, if we saw this story, if we read this story, if we paid attention to this story, we would not miss what unfolds here. Rehoboam rejects wisdom and prioritizes his preferences, his comfort, his conveniences. We can say it this way. If we simply stay in the world of preference, then we keep ourselves as the reference point. It is my prayer, church, that our allegiance would be to our Creator God, and that our first desire would be to walk in the ways of God's kingdom. That we would not miss the massive wisdom lesson that is being poured out to us from this Rehoboam story, from his failing to listen to the wisdom that was in his life. This story is pleading with us to scour the voices in our lives and ask this question: who are the people in your life that speak with wisdom, compassion, and the deepest desire for God's justice and righteousness? Who are those people? Who's that person, or who are these people? Because here's the thing, we know this, it's easy to surround ourselves with those who will tell us what we want to hear. But it's crucial that we have a community, however small or big that may be, that calls for Christ wisdom. That we would have a person or persons which speak into our lives with humility and integrity. That we then would have the humility and discernment to receive that which transcends shallow politics and economics for the eternal goal of shalom, that is peace, that is about the restoration to wholeness. That's what we're after. Friends, as you encounter Kairos moments, seek people. We're going to reflect and discuss with people who know how best to live lives that heal, that bless, that bring together. That's who we want to be listening to. That's who we want to discuss life with and how to live it. People of peace. That's what they're known as. Those who can... These people of peace, they can see through the facade. They can look beyond the temporary comfort and shallow profit to see the eternal. the very heart of the divine. So here's what I want to do. I want to invite each one of you to reflect and think about that person or those people who are people of peace in your life. And as just this is a practice. This is something to hopefully make us aware, but maybe you want to write a note of gratitude to that person or those people. That would be beautiful. Maybe you want to write out a prayer asking God, because you're maybe like, man, I don't have that person. I want more of these people in my life. Great, great, great. Maybe you write out a prayer asking God to make clear who those people are for you in your life. Yeah. Yeah. Let's sit with that. Let's take that opportunity. And then, church, may you have eyes to see these Kairos moments. May you observe and listen to the voice of the divine in these moments. And then, may you reflect and discuss with those who provide wisdom for following the way of Christ. That is the way of restoration, renewal, and reconciliation. And friends, as you do this, may you know that the very grace and peace of Christ is with you and goes with you in this. Amen.